Get started. I'm sorry for the shortest lunch break in sensible history, but we did the best we could. We're going to be, I think, 10 minutes out of phase, but that's not too bad. We're going to have this session on social networking, and I have to admit freely that I'm no expert on this. I do know about Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook because I read about it. Maybe if, Dan, maybe you could harass that group out in the outer to take it to a different room or come into this room. But I think it's going to absolutely be something that we have to pay attention to. I know that as of very, very recently, that is maybe a month ago, the alumni relations group down on Peel Street are realizing with 100% certainty that the students of the present time are wired in this fashion far more than email and the like. You've maybe seen this ad on TV for, I guess it's Videotron, where a woman comes up and she says, you know about Facebook, you know about Twitter. Well, I don't want any of those things. I want my trusted email. And I think email is fading, although we obviously will still be using it. And I wanted to mention one thing just before we start, so we can stay about 10 minutes behind, is that I came hold of this morning of this little announcement. In fact, it's on the McGill In the News public affairs item that comes around, that Purdue University adds Twitter and Facebook to class participation students at Purdue University experimenting with this technology I'm not sure what this would be, they call it hot seat. And I guess the hot seat is available here on this back channel where anyone at the tables can make a pleasant, supportive, or rude remark at their leisure, which I'm not going to be reading here. It's too far away for me to read. I'll say that, but it's almost too far. But it's available for the panel to read, and if people are going to be talking about wish to make a comment. I'm told by Adam that it might be a minute before it emerges, but 1 minute. So if you, and I don't know, can you remove your remarks if you're particular? Okay, if it's a little bit heavy. Twitter is now mandatory for journalism students at a particular Australian university. So things like this are coming. My only complaint about Twitter is the name. I just never liked it. I don't like the notion of tweeting, but I can't deny that it's here and it's not going away. That's for sure. So our first presenter this morning, and this will be for 5 minutes, or this afternoon for 5 minutes each, and then with questions, will be Richard Donovan of the Dace Hotel Faculty of Management.
There's no room at the podium for my notes, which is kind of, this is my electronic agenda that I faithfully carry with me. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to make this, wrote notes down and put some things, so I'll be a little all over the place. One thing I sort of want to start off with is I'm an outlier in the room, I think. Are there any other management professors or instructors in the room? All right, so I am an outlier, both physically, because we're way down here in the bottom right-hand corner of the university, but two, because I'm actually coming from two very different perspectives. One is from the teaching side, which is what we're here for, but also from the business side, and I want to touch upon both of those very quickly in terms of my outlying thing. So just to give you a perspective of what I do, I teach the Intro to IS course, and actually social media has had an impact. Not only in terms of how I have to manage the classroom, but also in terms of how I actually teach the course. A lot of the content of that course has now moved to economics of IS, digital goods, really expensive to produce the first copy, zero to produce every other copy. Think of music, think of software, think of a lot of things, and that changes the whole dynamics of a lot of the ways we actually teach, let alone how we have to manage the classroom. I also teach a third-year class or a final-year class called IT and Business, and what we do there is we take different industries. We look at transportation, pharmaceutical, retail, banking, of course, and finance, and we look at how IT or IS has affected those industries, everything from automatic teller machines all the way through to, you know, you tracking your parcel on UPS or FedEx and so on. And again, social media has affected those industries tremendously. So that said, in terms of social networking, it's inevitable. It's here. It's not going to go away. We can duck and we can hide and whatever, but it's still here. And what that means is it's simply another tool or another thing we have to worry about and we have to manage. All right. So it's as if we didn't have enough to manage already with laptops in the classroom and cell phones and everything else. We now have to manage this. And one of the things I sort of say when I speak to professors is I actually believe we're in the business of doing three things as teachers or instructors in this university. One is we're in the knowledge business, and that's, you know, pretty straightforward. I actually believe we're in the skill-building business, and skill-building means everything from communication skills to team-building skills to negotiation skills to all those kinds of things. And third, we're actually in the character-building business. If you think about it, at the undergrad level, we take, you know, kids, I can call them kids now, because I graduated before they were born, and that kind of scares them. It's actually really unfair to be a professor, because every year our students stay the same age, but we get a year older. It just doesn't seem strike me as very fair. But anyway, from a character-building perspective, we are taking 18-year-olds, and they're making decisions on their careers, making decisions on their potential future spouse in some cases, and so on, and so we need to do that. So what that means for us is we actually have to take the time, or I believe we have to take the time to tell students, oh, by the way, that was inappropriate. Oh, and by the way, if you actually put that on Facebook or you put that on Twitter or you write an email in such and such a way, if you did that in the real world, you'd actually get fired. And I thought I'd let you know that. And some students appreciate it, and some students look at you cross-eyed, and, you know, we all know, we've all had that look before. So the things that we have to deal with here are in and out of class, right? How do we deal with Facebook and Twitter and all those other things in the classroom, right? Because we, you know, let's not fool ourselves. And I'm actually on a committee at the university level to look at technology in the classroom, and we're working on that and trying to develop some policies or guidelines around that. And the other thing is the private versus public. Right. One of the things I tell my students is that if you don't want it public, then don't put it anywhere. Don't even put it in an email, because sooner or later it's going to get out. So it's a question of how we manage that. And so I refer to that as social etiquette and how we have to deal with that and in that frame of mind. So from a business perspective, like I said before, it actually changes the content of my courses from economics of IS, blogs, wikis. I actually have a wiki assignment that I have my students do. Social etiquette, and then, of course, the scary part about this is that industry now or companies are actually using Facebook to hire people. So if they're going to hire you and they're interviewing you, they're actually going to go look at your Facebook page. And if you have some nasty stuff up there, some unflattering pictures or whatever that might be, companies have been known to say, well, we're not going to hire you. And so that's kind of a really scary kind of thing as well. And students need to realize that it's out there. And so that's sort of my 3 seconds of glory, and I'll pass it back on to David. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next two presenters, and then we'll have questions at the very end of this. The next two presenters are from the Faculty of Education. Sam Bertizzi is the next one. And please take over.
I have my notes on my parking stub. Good afternoon, everyone. Basically, I'm going to say a few things. I'll give you access to the course website I use on Ning, because you can go in and see the kind of work that students do. And I think I'm going to be the unabashed, I don't know what the student's going to say, but I think I'm going to be the unabashed cheerleader for social networking, regardless of impact to higher education, and I expect to spark some discussion. First of all, you need to know my iPhone is here with my Facebook app, and I have virtually everyone in my life that's important to me connected. I have students that graduated from high school a few years ago, because I used to be a high school principal. I'm now an elementary principal, and I lecture at McGill. A few that you kind of mentor, you're keeping an eye on, they're here. I have my first girlfriend 12 years old, who lives in Milan, Italy, and we've had parallel lives with her kids in school and myself. And so that's the power. You never feel alone. You're connected. For real stuff and for silly stuff, and I think we need to be part of the group. He said that the mission of schools, I'm a high school principal. It's interesting. The mandate of the Quebec Education Reform Program, there's three things we try and do from kindergarten to grade 11, and watch how it applies to McGill. Our job is to educate, to qualify, you guys come in at the end of that, and to socialize. The course I teach is for future teachers, and at McGill, students can take one or two tech courses in a four-year program, and if they don't get to love technology with my class or Maureen's class, we're going to have another generation of teachers that will not use it for the next 35 years. So my role in the class is to, you know, use the technology and model at the same time. So I use WebCT just for marks. And yes, I have the same concerns. I have to key them in manually, which is ironic. I use Ning, which is Facebook with an educational purpose, and we're basically trying to emulate what the kids do on Facebook, and basically with them, I tell them, you can create a free education site. It's totally ad-free if you're in a K-12, and so I'm giving them the tools to use. But make no mistake about it, the train has left the station, and you're either part of the solution or part of the problem. I think there's some interesting research that's coming out as far as higher education. Are we becoming obsolete? Are we becoming passengers? We're supposed to be the leaders. We have the brain content. We know what we want to put in our kids' heads, hearts, and souls. And if we don't use this powerful tool, not all of them are going to get the message. So I really feel that in this area, we need to model appropriate use of technology. We need to show them, because we assume that kids know it. They don't, whether they're 14 or 20. And as future teachers in the course I do, we make sure that it's used. Okay, so if I get an email or whatever, I'll give you all the stuff. I've been using Ning for 3 years, and you can see all the student journals, the stuff. And what it does, which some profs may not like, is each semester, each course I give, I create a separate group. And you know what the students say? Sir, don't take it off. I may need that 6 months down the line or when I get a job teaching. So I'm the cheerleader of the group. And we look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Sam. Maureen Barron is our third five-minute speaker, and she's also from the Faculty of Education. Are there things coming in?
Yeah.
Adam?
Yep.
There are. Wow. I promise not to go on Facebook during the panel.
Please.
Hello, everybody. I apologize for what I'm going to sound like. I went into an elementary school on Monday. I was on the computer. I no longer have the immunity I used to have, and I got one of those little bugger colds. So I'm hoping my voice will hold out. Both speakers before me have mentioned some points that I'm going to key in on right away. We have to use these tools. They're there. The students we've got in front of us right now are what I call the always connected generation. They don't even turn off their tech or their media when they go to sleep. If you live with a teenager or a 20-something-year-old, sneak into their bedroom at night. The iPhone is open. The computer is open. Something is always on. If you ask your students in your class, okay, everybody turn off your phone at the beginning of class, they're not all going to do it. Something's on vibrate. They cannot disconnect. So if the tool is that important to them, we can't cut them off. What we do, or what I do in my particular course, is I try and tell them that there's an appropriate time and place for everything. My mother used to say to me when I was a little girl, there's an appropriate place to go and blow your nose, and there's an appropriate place not to. Same kind of thing. For me today, an appropriate piece of technology was paper and pencil, because I made my notes as I was jotting them down on the train this morning. That's what I used. When I go into the classroom, my appropriate technology is everything. I'm in one of the active learning classrooms, and I try and use every piece of technology that's there. However, what I do try and teach my student in terms of the appropriateness is, when you walk into my classroom for an hour and a half, I do not want you using anything that does not relate to the learning community and the learning activity of our classroom. So if I tell you to go on Facebook, if I want you to go on Twitter because we're going to do a back channel kind of thing, yeah, go ahead, we're going to use it. But if I'm telling you I want you to build a particular item with the technology, use the tools you need to do that. But if I'm doing a lecture situation or we're doing a classroom discussion situation or a different thing where I want you to concentrate on one speaker, please put your tech away for that moment in time or for that piece of time. And for a lot of the students, it's like I'm asking them to cut off their arm. It's something I have to be very specific about. This particular year, for the very first time, I threw a student out of class because I had said at the beginning of class, this is a specific activity, no cell phones for this hour and a half. She ignored me. She put the cell phone on the table beside her. I quietly walked up behind her and I said, I asked you to please put that away. And she looked at me and she put it in her purse. Didn't take 5 minutes later, it's back out and she's texting. And I went over to her and I said, you know, this is warning number two. Please put it away so you can participate in the class the way the class is going right now. About 3 minutes later, she's back on. I walked up to her. I said, please leave the class. If you have not got the maturity to follow instructions and participate the way the class is going, please leave. And she looked at me, and she just got up and walked out. And I said, no, you're not going out for a five-minute break. Come back, take all your stuff, goodbye. And she did. There was no feedback from the class. Nothing happened. About a week or two later, she emailed me, could I please give her a reference for a job application for the summer? Okay. Honest to God truth. This is what we mean when we were talking about character building. It's what we were talking about, that line between appropriate and inappropriate, between understanding the impacts of what you do, and that these impacts don't go away. Yeah, I have a long memory, but the impacts, your digital footprint also doesn't go away. And the kids, because I'm also going to call them kids, don't understand the digital impact, the digital footprint. During the day, I work in the school board, the English Montreal School Board, and part of my job at different times of the year is to interview people who want a job with us as new teachers. Trust me, if I get that little sneaky feeling, I go on Facebook. We all go on Facebook, and we do check them out. And one of the things we tell the kids, or I tell people, is it's not just you on Facebook, but who are you connected to? So somebody asked to friend me. I took a look, it was a teacher, and then I took a look at who that teacher is friends with. That teacher was friends with his 14 and 15-year-old students. And I said, no, I can't risk that connection in case I have to go in and discipline one of those students or get involved. So it's not just knowing who you're friends with, but who are your friends friends with, because that connection keeps going all the way down. And that's it, I'm out of time.
Pretty close.
All right, so one more point I'll make is, if I agree, use social networking in the classroom here at McGill, but we have to set very specific limits so the kids' expectations in the use of the social networking is mirrored or relatively the same as yours, and that will avoid a lot of conflict. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. I think a lot of this electronic business is that most of us all deal with is a Hydro-Quebec plot, because it can be nothing but an increase in the meter readings with these. And I've been reading about students who, or younger people, let's say, who will wake up in the middle of the night, as just as you're saying, and answer because of the vibration device. Our next and last speaker is Rebecca Dooley, who has 3 more weeks of power in her grasp and has done a really great job at the SSMU as a VP for them and has spoken widely, and I've seen her in numerous contexts influencing policy, really, is one of her fortes. And so I offer her to the microphone.
Hi, I guess I'm the kid here. young people, undergraduate students, graduate students are all really engaged with social networking. I think the statistic is 18 to 25-year-olds, 70% of them are on something like Facebook or Twitter, and they spend on average about 2 hours, probably more, a day on those sites. So I think, actually, this panel is a little bit different topic of discussion than what I thought, but I'm really interested in how we can repurpose those systems for learning. Students are constantly on these websites, and websites like WebCT, MyMcGill, aren't necessarily integrated into students' everyday routines for where they are on the web. So it's about trying to integrate our learning and teaching at McGill into students' everyday routines. A lot of those websites, a lot of those learning management systems are actually making themselves mimic these websites a lot more because of the usability of these sites. Students understand them and they get to know them and they feel more comfortable using sites similar to Facebook and Twitter. We are in sort of a different culture for how learning operates and sort of functions within a university. Students can find basically a lot of the content, a lot of the facts, a lot of the information in this sort of Google Wikipedia culture that we have. And they're really interested in having different sort of critical engagement with the material, different sort of interactions with their professors, with their TAs, and with other students within the classroom. And that's where social media can sort of come in. Things like back channels can be useful, as well as creating Facebook groups, creating sort of Facebook networks for students to share information, share interesting articles that relate to course material to sort of support their learning. It's also a useful way for students to have sort of professors and TAs be a part of their networks. Like one of the professors was saying, you know, I have my life connected to me. Having the academic world, your academic life, also connected to you. I don't think that we have to compromise the academic mission of the university in order to integrate sort of these social media technologies into our classrooms. I think that social media should be used in a targeted fashion. It's not for every discipline. It's not for every course. It's not for every teacher. And it's not for every student. I think that the assumption that once you incorporate a new interesting technology or social media into your classroom, into your courses, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden students are engaged and you're done. Like, that's not the case at all. You really have to look at, survey your students, ask them, if I did this, would you be interested in sort of, you know, more interested in the course material? Would you find new ways to engage with the course material? You know, you really have to engage in a discussion about ways that learning can sort of best impact the material that you're working with, the students that you're working with. And I think that that's a really important thing for departments to sit down and consider what could be a best practice for the type of material we're dealing with in terms of, you know, what sort of technology we can use. Do back channels and Facebook apply, or do they not? Like we were talking about before, math, PowerPoint, not really best friends in that case. I think that we should encourage students to use social media responsibly, definitely. I think that in that sense, we do have to treat them as adults in doing so, I think that repurposing social media for learning can be a route for doing that. I encourage two problems to think about when dealing with social media. If you're expecting students to integrate their learning into their everyday lives, into their social media networks, you have to think about the impact that has on the workload you're asking students to do. As a part of their classroom learning, it's an out-of-classroom activity in some cases. And also, social media should not be used to replace FaceTime with professors, FaceTime with TAs. It should really be used to, when you can, in large courses and when you can't have that face time, to really try and engage with students in those different ways. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you sure you can't run for re-election? Thank you very much. I think we've touched base with a number of things. I wanted to mention one other comment. Sharon Roy sent me a an item from the web, which I'd actually already seen, which I don't believe, but it said that 80% of all faculty are Facebooked and Twittered in one frame or another. I wouldn't doubt that it's a double-digit percentage, but I kind of doubt that it's 80, but it might be. I suppose it could be true. Now, here are for the panel, and I think we can actually probably regain our time frame to stay on time with 10 minutes or so of question answering. One question that has been posed, what role does social networking play in teaching and learning? We've heard actually some interesting answers, but I would say other points just to mention quickly, and then I would suggest you can come to the mics and ask the panel one way or another, what opportunities for collaboration, how does it impact on your relationship with students, and what technologies work best? That's a good one because there are so many, and others that are emerging with these curious names. And what is the role of McGill in coordinating and assisting this to happen in a seamless and useful fashion? So are there questions from the audience for the panel? Yeah, Laura.
My name is Laura Weiner. I'm Associate Director of Teaching and Learning Services. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm the chair of the working group that Richard referred to on developing guidelines for the use of mobile computing and communications devices in classrooms. These guidelines have been developed and are currently under review. And we're about to launch another working group looking at social media. So this is very timely. My question really is a very fundamental one, and I think, Richard, you've hit on it, Maureen, to some extent, but it's the social. How do you reconcile the fact that a teacher-student relationship is not a social relationship, and how do you respect those boundaries? We have a lot of trouble at McGill, especially with graduate students, but also with undergraduate students. We're not in a social relationship. We may be once students graduate. And that's a very different thing when you keep in touch with former students. But in the context of a public area, in the same way that in business, I would imagine, you shouldn't always be friends with your boss. You shouldn't always get yourself as an instructor or as a student into a situation where those roles are being confounded. I'd be very curious, Rebecca, to know your thoughts on that.
That's actually a really good question. And with Facebook, I mean, that's the primary problem. Something like a back channel or a Twitter channel is another scenario. Being friends with your students, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that even students would want to be friends with their professors. No offense. a lot of people do put a lot of information out there. There can be ways for people to create separate Facebook accounts for, different parts of their lives. So, for example, like I have a SmooVP University Affairs account. I don't talk about, what I ate for breakfast that day on that account, nor do I talk about that on my actual account. But that can be a venue, and having, people be able to compartmentalize. There are different privacy settings within Facebook and stuff like that where you can, block certain users from becoming your friends. It sounds so mean. But I think that there are ways to compartmentalize your life on Facebook. You could have a social private account and a more public professional account. I'm not saying that solves the problem. Yes. I mean, it's definitely a stumbling block, and it's definitely something that needs to be negotiated. I'm not saying Facebook is not made for learning. That's not its purpose. But yeah, there are ways to investigate how we can repurpose or change Facebook. Students connect with each other on Facebook. I think that's the best thing to encourage. I'm registered in my courses not only within Minerva, but on Facebook. So I know all the other students on Facebook better within my courses. I think that's the first best use for the platform.
Laura, you're being back-channeled, but before we get to that, Sam had a point
to
make.
Just to follow up, it's interesting. I was going to say the same thing. The students don't necessarily want us to be their friends either. That's why I ended up going to Ning, because I had a very clear separation. We wanted to model the appropriate use of social networking for future teachers, and all that stuff there is what we're trying to teach the future teachers and to work with, and that's a very different feel. And our, I would imagine a young student's version of friend is very different than ours, but the lines are blurred between private and public, and I think that if we as leaders don't model, look, on my, don't think I have 1,000 friends. On Ning, I have 400 former students, and that's a very, they contact me with very specific teaching questions, ideas, stuff like that. And on Facebook, I probably have, I kept it private all these years, I probably have 60. Out of those 60 people, there's some close friends. There's a few kids that were in difficulty in high school that I'm kind of tracking, and then there's some silly stuff because we're all human. But the kids respect, they know. So, and I think you gave an example last week. So if someone says, hey, sir, you want to be my friend? I think he said last week, why? And what's the per? And kids adjust. So we have to model that. And they see. If you go to my Facebook account, it's very clear. And the kids, you know who are the most respectful ones? Those 10 or 15 kids that they're looking around and say, wow, Mr. B is letting us in here. We see what he lectures. We see who he contacts. We see that. They're more respect. You have no idea how well behaved they are because they know that that's my expectation. And if you screw up, you're banned or you're, you see, that's what we have to show the kids. There's a time and place for everything, the way I think that's what Maureen was saying, and that's what you're trying to do. You know, you're going to be on Facebook, your employers are going to look on it. But I really think the key to social networking, we have to enter their world so that they can see the other stuff.
Richard, you wanted to comment?
I think very quickly, I think we've redefined the definition of what a friend is. Right? When I was a kid, a friend was like, I went outside and played tag with my friends, and when my mom yelled out to come for supper, I came for supper. Now my kids go home, and first thing they are is on Facebook or whatever. And so the word friend, we have to be very careful. So I actually like using the word connected as opposed to being, you know, every person who is a friend on Facebook, and I am on Facebook, they're not my friend. I'm connected with them. So I think we need to be very careful with the naming of these things, and you know, unfortunately, Facebook has the word friend, which then blurs us over into connectivity, as opposed to who could you really call your true friend. So, I mean, I would throw that out as a distinction of the two.
Another question.
Well, a comment, actually. My name is Samantha Bateman. I was the course instructor for employment and continuing education. And my students are upwards of 21, right? And I was stunned with how unfamiliar they are with social media tools, right? Especially when we're getting into 30s and 40-year-olds that were in my course. But even the 21-year-olds had no idea about what LinkedIn is. And certainly, as I posted on Twitter, LinkedIn is a huge social media tool that I use in my recruitment practice, but also I focused a lot of time discussing this with the students, and they were struggling with it. They were also struggling with just the online content of the course. So I think that while there are a lot of students maybe at the undergrad or the graduate level that are very comfortable with social media tools, I'm seeing that in the class that I had of, you know, 25-plus students, they were uncomfortable with it. And I would also say that, you know, rather than having my students connect into me through Facebook, I encourage them to stay in touch if they wanted, those who asked if we could stay in touch, through LinkedIn, which is a professional networking site. So,
any comments from the PS Morning?
Just to say that confusion between what they do use personally with what they're expected to use professionally starts at high school, at the beginning of high school. And that links back to what Richard said about friends. I've worked with some grade 5 students, grade 5, 10 years old, and I'll say to them, how many friends do you have on Facebook, even though they're not supposed to be on? And they'll go, 264. But don't worry, only 20 of them are my real friends. The others are my Facebook friends. So they are the ones you're getting, the ones that will be in your classroom very soon, have already made these niche definitions about friends and about social situations. What we call a business meeting to them is a social situation. And so you're going to be seeing a different group of students within the next couple of years. and they think they know all about social networking, they think they know all about information literacy and the web, but they don't yet.
Another question?
Comment. Hi, yes, I have my name is Laura Naismith. I'm a PhD student in the Faculty of Education. And I have a question in terms of this sort of negotiation of public versus private. When it comes to students who create content that's going to be shown online, perhaps Sam can speak to that. He talked about us being able to see the work that his students had had created. And so I just wonder how you sort of talk to the students about the fact that their work could be seen not just by other people in the class, but maybe by the wider professional and even the, you know, very wide, worldwide community.
Copyrights.
Yeah. Any work, well, she just whispered copyright, that's a whole issue. So basically, when the students come into the class, we say you're going to be part of this social networking because we're trying to model good teaching, good practice, and you as future teachers, we want you to do this. But the site is password protected, and so they do weekly reflections and blogs that's password protected. The students can kind of see, they can see each other's work. If a student is absolutely not comfortable to make that part, the blog, public, we respect that it's private, and you negotiate, and that's part of the what they're trying to learn, that there's stuff that you produce that's for an audience, because the students are also creating websites and digital stories, and at the same time we're teaching them copyright, the to's and don'ts, but at the end of the day we do a lot of what the purpose is. Check what your profile is, be careful what you say and do, but they have control. Everyone, and they don't know that either on Facebook, everyone that creates a web presence needs to know what's public and what's private. And that's part of our job, certainly in education. But they have total control. And when I give samples, because they're comfortable, the students sometimes will say, you know what, I thought this journal was brilliant. You can share it.
Dan, you had, or I'm sorry. Here first. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Ben Young, mathematics. I had a couple of, I give it basically the same question, but slightly different spin on it. I ultimately didn't encourage or discourage students from using social media in my class because of two reasons. One, I was uncomfortable in asking people to, basically to ascribe to Facebook's end-user license agreement as part of my course. I didn't know what was in there. I didn't feel comfortable doing that. Facebook doesn't have a great record in terms of privacy, for example. Secondly, there is a bit of a technology accessibility issue. It's not that everybody in the class has a cell phone. Everybody but two people in the class has a cell phone. And I, there's five people probably that aren't on Facebook or so forth, and I didn't particularly want to exclude those people. I sort of wanted to hear from all of you, actually, about how you might go about negotiating issues of access and issues of requiring people to do certain things or not. About, you know, requiring people to use social media or not.
Comment, please.
I was trying to touch on that briefly when I spoke before, is that really engaging in a discussion with your students about, you know, how to engage with course material and technology on a whole, not just regarding social media, but doing an informal poll of the class. Would you want to connect to these different, you know, platforms? How would you like us to use those different platforms? And really empowering students to have a discussion about, you know, learning on a whole, I think can be beneficial, and, you know, how learning can play into technology. I think that's a good way of doing it, is, you know, asking students at the beginning of a course and providing a bunch of different options, and then you'll see if students are really, if you have a few students who are really uncomfortable doing an informal, even clicker poll, then you'll be able to say, okay, then, you know, it's not unanimous within the course. Let's try and investigate other ways that we can engage with the course material, even just using WebCT.
Ben? Oh, another comment?
I like to throw this out a little bit. I think one of the issues here is that when we talk about social media, we automatically think Facebook, right? Boom, right? We don't. There's a lot of other components to this, wikis, blogs, and so on. And there's a question here that talks about, you know, in my courses, I don't actually think we should technically use Facebook in our classroom. I mean, it's outside, it's connections, as I talked before, but, you know, use of wikis and blogs and so on. bad behavior is bad behavior. We have a certain number of students in every one of our classes who's going to behave badly regardless, and we'd love to get rid of them, but they're still around. And they're a certain percentage. The only difference now is that we're getting the bad behavior faster or quicker. No different than if they're in my office, or no different if they behave badly in the room, whatever that is. So I think we need to be very careful about, it's more about speed and how quickly this is happening. It's no different than a student saying, "Sir, why didn't you answer my email? I sent it to you half an hour ago." And it's like, well, I've got other things to do. It's that expectation that we have to be very careful about in terms of managing that and managing their expectations as the next generation comes through being totally connected. I would argue that.
No.
Dan O'Connell, IT customer services, but also, more importantly, a father of four very connected kids. While I agree with a lot of the things that are being said about the use of the technology, I have to question one thing that my kids often say to me is that it's great for making them able to multitask. And while I agree that to a certain degree there might be something to be said for multitasking ability, I'm also concerned about the lack of time for reflection, so sort of the downtime to reflect and to be away from the technology. And perhaps, Rebecca, you could respond to that from a student perspective, but I'm also interested in all of your comments.
Please.
Is it on?
I think so. Just
okay. Get
close.
Multitasking. I was talking about the workload that it places on students. Students are expected to be connected to their friends at the same time that they're in class, which poses a problem, obviously, for a lot of people in this room. But you are expected within this culture to constantly be connected, constantly be multitasking, be able to answer all of your emails while you are, you know, running a track meet, while you are, you know, doing all of these different things. And I think that within the classroom, it should definitely be encouraged to focus on the task at hand. And I think that's something that Laura's group is working on right now, is really trying to set up for professors good guidelines for how you can set up a classroom culture that encourages technology for the purpose of the task at hand at that time, which is learning. And I don't think that students would disagree that when you're in class and, you know, the reason we're here is for learning. I don't think students would disagree with that. I think that we do have to be careful when we do use social media and when we are repurposing it, not to be expecting students to multitask too much and not place a further burden on students outside of the classroom with our engagement with social media.
When's your downtime?
I mean, people can schedule downtime. I mean, I don't think that we're all, you know, students are all like these slaves to their like Blackberries and their iPhones. I think that we do, you know how to be healthy and like maintain our own mental health. But I think it is within, you know, the culture of the university to set up and encourage healthy practices, and that's something that this university does. So I think that there's space for that, but I don't think that we should assume that all students are being totally unhealthy in the way that they multitask and use their technology.
Denise?
Yes. Denise Laniel, French Language Center. I have a question for a student representative, which it's a comment that may be a question too. In my course, remember my advanced course, we do a debate on private public life through the issues raised by Facebook, and it's very interesting. And in the debate, I played a role of the one that's hesitating, should I be in Facebook or not, and it's kind of pro and con. And at the end, because I have the temptation to be myself in Facebook since I talk about that, but quite a few times, my students said, "Madame, you're a professor, don't be in Facebook." So I was just wondering, you know, it really was kind of spontaneous, so why would a student say that? Do you see any danger there for the teacher because of possible, kind of nasty attitudes?
I mean, I don't think that students would discourage you from being on Facebook because then they wouldn't be able to help themselves to write mean things on your wall. But Facebook is, I totally agree with your comment that we're not only talking about Facebook when we talk about social media. I mean, students definitely use blogs. They create blogs for your classes. They network on those blogs for your classes, and that's a great thing to encourage for your students to do.
Facebook is, yeah, I mean, some students will be afraid. Some students don't friend their family. They don't friend their parents on Facebook. I know I'm kind of happy my mother hasn't figured out how to create a Facebook account. Not because I'm hiding anything, just because, yeah. she bugged me. It's that line. And I think Facebook is seen as, you know, this realm of social networking for, you know, your friends and for young people. And you get kind of nervous when family and sort of people that you see as sort of authority figures in your life start friending you, because you're afraid of that line between social and your professional life. And students are very aware of that, and that's why they might discourage you from joining Facebook. But I think one thing that we should encourage students to use Facebook for is networking with each other when possible.
Sam, you wanted to weigh in on point?
Just, I think at the end of the day, it's been said before, some of the most powerful things we do in the class is when you have, you know, that live interaction. You connect with the kid, there's the aha moment, and it's still about that, right? Good teaching is good teaching. I would argue that Socrates probably thought he was a friend to his students and a mentor. But in the classroom, all these tools, basically what we need to do is, okay, the course that I do, which tools lend themselves to making my job easier and better? So if we can use some of the technology, like when you said the downtime, my class, because they're learning by doing and they're doing, we have very little time for reflection. The blogs is when they go home, they do the readings. And I even do it, I always tell the students I do the readings ask backwards. I want them to come into class, we do whatever the class activity is, we're running around, boom. Then I say, listen to what I say, what's your experience? Don't regurgitate what you think I want to hear. Give me your real thoughts, then do the textbook, then do the reading, and before next Tuesday's class, I want a nice reflective piece on what we did, what you read after the fact. And that's how I'm trying to embed. That's the downtime, because the kids are always doing stuff. So I think we really need to look at this as how will it make our lives easier, and what can I take to enhance what I do? Because I would imagine if you're doing this in business and law and writing, it's very different. There's not one size fits all. Maybe. And WebCT, the reason they're changing, I can guarantee you, I don't know, I don't have shares, their next version is going to have social networking built in, or they're going to go bankrupt. They're literally hemorrhaging millions of dollars because they're not connecting. So that's that, and we haven't even talked about iPad yet. So.
Maybe one last question, and then maybe we can have a two-minute break if you need to stretch, and then we'll be on time pretty much.
Hi, my name is Lise Weiner. I'm from Up the Hill in Education. Two points. One, some of the things that we're discussing as if they're new, like multitasking and paying attention in class, are not new problems. And I will translate them in historical perspective, that when I was in high school and in university, that the multitasking social networking medium of choice was passing notes. And there were three things you had to keep in mind. One was, don't get caught. The second one is, don't write down anything you don't want the professor to read in front of the entire class. And three, if the teacher asks you a question, you have to be ready with the answer. Now, if my students are prepared to do that and able to do that, then I don't care what they're doing. It's like I don't take attendance either. If they can pass my course without coming to class, then fine. So I think maybe we're blowing some of this up out of proportion a little bit. I agree it's very annoying, but it's no more annoying than people talking during class when other people are talking. The second question is, I'm wondering why we're talking as if there's none of this capacity on WebCT now. My students have learned how to post their assignments, all of their assignments, on the discussion blogs that I set up for each assignment. They get to decide what they post. They know it's only in the class. They have complete control over it. They can communicate with each other. I'm not sure why they would need any other social medium than to do this. Okay, WebCT is not beeping them every time they have a message, but you can make an email on their show up on your email. And I don't think it's too much to ask students to log into WebCT once a day. So I'm not sure that we need to even worry about this.
Is there a quick final comment?
Quick final comment. My response to that is I'm training student teachers who are going to go out to teach. They need to know what their students are going to be using, and they need to have the experience with what their students are using. And that's one of the reasons why I say during our class we are going to use these tools and experiment them. So when they walk into a classroom in my school board and those kids are talking about these tools and using these tools, the student teachers know what's going on. I agree with you, WebCT does do a lot of this stuff. But like I say, my high school students, my elementary school students don't have access to WebCT. I need my student teachers to be able to access and know what those K-11 students are using as well.
Okay, I think maybe we draw this to a close there. And then, so that we can keep on time, the other Weiner professor can come and we'll assemble the next session. And after that session, there can be about a 15-minute break. We've used up, I think, our lunchtime into this, and so we're staying on time for the participants.